Hello, it's only Sylv. Just a quick heads up before we get into it. We've recorded all these conversations remotely during lockdown, so there might be a few little glitches in the sound here and there. Anyway, I'll shut up now and let you crack on with listening to our chat. Welcome to the BIY Pod, a people podcast for the music business, bringing you meaningful and motivating career conversations. I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of BIY People and Talent, the people consultancy for the music business. In each episode, we'll share with you lovely listeners real career stories from some of the most interesting, inspiring and insightful people I've met over the course of my career. This week's guest is Laura Leon, founder of LL Collective and artist manager. I first met Laura in 2006, which is a whopping and slightly terrifying 15 years ago. I was doing HR in a TV post-production company at the time, and I was involved in recruiting Laura into a PA role. After that, Laura went on to work as an executive assistant and artist manager in a music management company. Then about 6 years after we initially met, Laura joined me at Universal, where she worked in the publishing side of the business. After her time at Universal, Laura moved on to BMG, and then in 2017, Laura set up LL Collective, where she's an artist manager and more broadly supports creatives to get to the next level without compromising their mental health and well-being. I'm really pleased to be chatting to Laura today for so many reasons. So thank you for agreeing to join us and welcome to the pod, Laura.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Genuinely really excited to have you here today because we obviously talk, you know, not on a weekly basis, but relatively regularly about lots of things career related and mental health related and the challenges that we both face on a daily basis and challenges that, you know, we hear that a lot of other people face as well. So it's really great to actually have you on the pod, not in, I was going to say in a formal setting, but it's not really a formal setting, but just for other people to hear the chat, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's definitely not formal because I'm just currently sat in my son's bedroom surrounded by toys.
Amazing. That sounds like
very
fun.
Informal.
Super informal.
Adding the fun in every day.
Exactly. Well, look, what we usually do to get our guests relaxed, we like to warm you up with some quick fire questions. So should we get stuck into those?
Yes, please.
Fabulous. And don't overthink it. What's the first album you bought?
First album was the Take That album. Can't remember the name of it, but I was completely obsessed. Yeah, not ashamed either.
That's what I like to hear. Who is your favourite member of Take That?
Mark Owen, definitely. I was convinced I was going to marry him.
What was the first gig you went to?
First gig was probably Another Level.
What, Dame Bowers?
Yeah. Again, not ashamed.
Not ashamed. No, there's no reason to be ashamed. I revealed my love of E17 on the first podcast, so, you know, desperately trying to maintain some semblance of cool, but it's just not possible. What's the last show you went to before lockdown?
Yeah, last show was Louis Vega, a house icon at the Royal Festival Hall, and as part of House Gospel Choir were performing with his full band. It was absolutely epic, and what a way to end before lockdown.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. And to be part of that as well, incredible. Mm. And what's on repeat at the moment?
On repeat is Erykah Badu. She just has this power to heal within.
Incredible artist.
Yeah.
Who's the artist that changed your life?
Ah, wow. Good question. I'd probably say Alicia Keys, that she's my number one.
I keep meaning to read her book because she, I think she did a podcast with Brené Brown that I listened to, and she was just wow, amazing.
Yeah, that's like scratching the surface of her book. It's an incredible journey of someone that started at such a young age and led down a path that she kind of lost control of and just lost herself. And she's just built those building blocks back to get to a point where she feels, yeah, like herself again and can thrive from that place.
I'm sure we'll come back to that, actually, when we get into conversation. So a final quick-fire question for you. What's your dream lineup, past or present? And that could be lineup of a band, maybe a choir, maybe a festival. So dream lineup, past or present?
Oh, wow. I think a co-headline of Beyoncé and Alicia Keys. That would be quite amazing. Prince, Stevie Wonder, Erykah Badu and Frankie Knuckles.
What a show. Before we get stuck into your career story, when you kindly agreed to be on the podcast, I sent you a list of words to pick from your peas in the pod.
And you picked four P's: proactivity, purpose, patience, and people. So what was it about those words that made you pick them?
So proactivity, I feel like, if needed in this industry, especially as a manager as well, it would be so easy just to rest on your laurels. Even when you get to a certain point, you think, oh, people are just going to come to me. But actually, I find the joy in connecting dots and networking and a little bit of Instagram stalking and strategic liking to, you know, casting a sort of intentional seed. So yeah, I think being proactive is really key in this industry. Next one, purpose. Personally, I feel like it's taken me a while to find that. I think I always knew it, but I was denying it quite a while. I was sort of my own worst enemy for a long time. But yeah, I think purpose in whatever form, whether that's work-related or life, you know, what you want your legacy to be, I think it's really important to do some homework, research, self-discovery to really unearth what your purpose is.
On that point, I think it's really interesting that you use the word legacy. I don't think I have necessarily ever thought of it that way, but that feels to me like a really important way of framing it. It's like, what do you want to leave behind? I talk about personal brand quite a lot. I do a lot of sessions on, you know, what we want people to say about us when we're not in the room. And I suppose that feeds into exactly the same thing. It's like, you know, what do you want people to say about you when you're not in the room, or when you're when you're not here anymore? What are the things that you want to leave behind you? So that's a really interesting way of framing it. I've not thought about it like that before. So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Laura.
My pleasure. Next one. Yeah. Patience. I think that's a skill that requires work. I personally feel like you have to work at a lot of things, and patience is something that I've worked on and actually relished in, you know, adding it as like a superpower in a way. It's out of your control. Like, even currently where we are now in this interesting, unique time, you have to be patient. Otherwise, we get like you're your own worst enemy. You'll literally find yourself, take a step back, chill, you know. Things take time to grow. Like, look outside. The tree didn't grow overnight, and the roots need to form. There's so much growth that's involved in having patience and owning patience.
And I think patience is, I mean, we talk about patience quite a lot. It's a topic that comes up relatively often, I think, when we are doing the podcast. It's a daily sort of sore point for me, is patience.
Challenge.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. But it's going beyond a challenge, actually. And I'll explain what I mean by that. And it's not my own patience that appears to be the problem.
Right.
I feel like we live in this world. So it's quite interesting. Obviously, in my job, HR, recruitment, people development, on the recruitment side of that, and in fact, on all elements of that, probably the HR side as well, it often means that essentially I am, in inverted commas, helping people, right? I'm providing them with information. Well, they need me to provide them with information, or I suppose as part of my job, I just talk to a lot of people. It seems sometimes to me that, I don't know if it's because of the way we are connected now with so many different forms of communication, all which tend to mean being attached to some kind of device often, that people are becoming impatient. But I guess that's indicative of the time we're living in and the uncertainty. Like, this week I had someone who rang me every day. They literally rang me twice every single day. I couldn't answer their call. They were texting me. And I get that it's quite difficult, isn't it? And I suspect we'll come onto the subject of boundaries when we get into our conversation and protecting our mental health as well. It's really hard, isn't it, that patience element, because a lot of people are bombarded by, okay, so someone emails you, they don't get a response to the email, and then they'll follow up that email. Did you get my email, by the way? Yeah, exactly. So they're creating more traffic in your inbox, more work for you in your inbox by sending that email, asking you if you got that email or if you're going to follow up on that email. And then if they don't get a response to that, they might call you and text you. And then maybe
like, you're stressing me out just hearing that. It's like the level of like breath like disappears, because it's like, oh, this is just too much. But I feel like this time, especially like on so many levels, people need to breathe. There's been situations work-wise where I remember there's a couple of summers ago, all something happened where it was all too much, and someone very close to me, my mentor, was just like, switch everything off, not life or death, just let it breathe. And then like by the time I switched my phone back on, sorted itself out, because I think people are wanting people to fix things. And I think even I worked with a coach recently, brilliant guy, Stephen Daltrey. He works within the music industry as an executive coach. And he was saying to me, because even in my sort of tagline of what I do, I had help creatives get to the next level without compromising mental health. But he said, take out the word help and it's empower. Because you're not there to do their job. You're there to uplift them and create space so they can be creative. So I think even just the language and you saying, I help people, automatically you're kind of on the back foot, because I get it. Obviously, what you do is different to what I do, but I think there's an element of help. You're going to rescue them. So
that is so interesting. Again, you've reframed the way I'm thinking about that, and that's super helpful. That's empowering for me, because sometimes I feel quite overwhelmed and quite tired, actually, because I feel like part of what the expectation is of me from other people is that I'm going to solve their problems for them.
You're magically going to create a job for them.
No. Yeah.
You're going to do the research. You've got the connections to bring in those opportunities, but then they need to do the work to get those roles. They can't rely on you to do that for them.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And I think, wow, that's super helpful. I love that. That's such a clever piece of advice, actually. Thank you for that, Laura. So you're already reframing my entire work ethic and mindset, and we're only in your P's. And your final P then is people.
Yeah, people. I mean, the fact that my business is called LL Collective, I've thought a lot recently. It's something that was instinctive to me, and I didn't really know why I'd called it that, but it was just it came to me quite a few years ago, sat on it for a long time. And it's that collective power, the collective power to make change. And I think even in this last year, the importance of people and sharing energy, energy exchange, sparking ideas of people, other physical human beings, is vital for our survival. And I just, obviously hoping that we can get back to a place where that can be a regular day-to-day activity. But I think in the meantime, it's about trying to be creative and discover a sense of adventure within your circumstance. I've got a young son, he's 18 months old. He's a daily reminder of how amazing life is. He's got me through this last year or so. And the fact that that is an energy exchange. I mean, the fact that your company has people in the title. Yeah, and I think that's it. When you start your own company, as when I started, I did feel quite alone, taking that leap of faith. But I did have people around me, and it felt like it's quality over quantity in terms of forming that really supportive network that are your cheerleaders, that you can, feel no way about calling them in a mess because, it's all got too much. And sharing that, I love Brené Brown, but all of her work about vulnerability, it's so important to be able to share those moments with people. And I think as well, over this last year, I found personally that even just by going on a Zoom, you can see other people's homes. I feel like that barrier of music industry, I'm someone because I like music and I do this. It's but we're all just human beings. We have a love for music and we're doing our jobs, all for the greater good. But at the end of the day, if someone's feeling shit or great, let's talk about it. Let's talk about and share. This is such a unique time where everyone's going through the same thing, but in a different way.
I think that's really
that level of empathy.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because you're right about you are through a screen in people's homes and it's like the curtain has literally been pulled back and you actually, that person who you thought was really scary or whatever it happened to be, or maybe you hadn't connected with before, all of a sudden you're seeing them in their natural environment. You're hearing the kids go mad in the background, or, much like when we started recording this podcast and all of a sudden there's a knock at my door and there's someone there to pick up a parcel, whatever. You see a less sort of sanitized version of people, and I think that is really important. And you mentioned Brené Brown and all the work she does around vulnerability. I mean, that to me is what it's all about. There's that thing when you talk to someone and the first thing people say is, how are you? And they don't mean how are you.
No, they're not.
They mean hello,
a question. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting you say that, actually, because Natalie Maddox, who's the founder of Helpful for Choir, creative director, so I manage her. I manage the choir, but essentially I manage Natalie. And we started calling our meeting pushes rather than, another meeting. It just has that negative connotation around it. So we're let's think of something. Okay, push, right? Priority. Okay, priorities. Understanding, how are we feeling? In this current situation, we're having a meeting, but it's actually, how are you feeling? how are you feeling? Because it's going to have an impact on how productive this session is going to be. S is for self-care, because that is high on our priority list. And it's not just the go and get your nails done or, you know, get your hair done. It is much deeper than that. And then H is everything else.
H is everything else.
Everything else, yeah.
I love that.
Everything else. Higher. But before we start, well, it's such an important part of those moments when we have our push is we say, how are you feeling? We give three words to describe how we're feeling. And it just really sets the tone, because it just, yeah, it creates a really safe space to share and just be yourself. And, you know, we try to incorporate that in other meetings outside of just the two of us. But that's going to be a slow process, because I think it seems very informal. But we're determined to make that a common thing.
I love that. I'm totally on board. And it's interesting, isn't it? Mm. Just adding an extra word, like, how are you, night standard, to how are you feeling? Because actually, how are you? Oh, yeah, I'm fine, whatever. But how are you feeling? Oh, I'm actually feeling quite lonely or overwhelmed or tired, you know? I think that's such a, again, you're blowing my mind. And we've like four words literally into the podcast. But that is so important. And because sometimes I worry, because, you know, dependent on who I'm talking to, and often it will be someone who I maybe don't know that well, and they say, how are you? And I actually tell them how I am. And they weren't expecting that at all. So then you feel like a bit of a dick. But but actually, you know, I kind of feel like, don't say it if you don't really want the answer, because I think that, again, going back to
habit,
that one,
though.
There's that awkward thing as well, isn't there, where you go, oh, hi, how are you? And they go, yeah, I'm fine, how are you? And you go, yeah, I'm fine, how are you? And then before you know it, you've said, how are you, about 6,000 times without actually ever properly answering
and then answering your own question.
There's
another lady who's very important in my life, Dr. Talene, like I mentioned her to you before. I worked with her for 6 months as I left BMG. Really wanted to kind of go deeper. I'd done a lot of meditation, but I just wanted to really kind of go into a place, unearth my potential. And yeah, we chat all the time, but she said something recently on a workshop that when people say they're fine, I think she said it's feelings inside needing expressing or something like that. The fact that you're just like, yeah, fine. Well, you're clearly not fine. But that's the thing, a lot of people's reaction to how are you is like, yeah, fine.
It's like punctuation.
Real kind of barrier to...
It's like a word to end a sentence. How are you? Fine.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a full stop in a sentence. And also, like, I suppose the physical manifestation to that is almost like a hand in the face. Like, I'm fine. Let's move along. Yeah. Let's not go there.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Yeah. I love it. I love it. Okay. Well, look, fabulous, fabulous P's for us there. Productivity, purpose, patience and people. And we've spent quite a lot of time talking about your P's in the pod. But what I'd love to do now is get stuck into your career story questions. I guess the sensible place to start is to ask you, when and how you realised that you could work in music, or that the music business side of things actually existed?
So from leaving school, I started singing. I was never really one of those children who loved singing. As I was leaving school, it just happened. And then I was pretty good at it. And a lot of people were telling me I was good, so okay, cool. I was involved in various different pop bands and different projects, did a solo thing for a while. And then I was just like, I love singing, but I don't want to do it as a career, because there's a whole other side of it that I just wasn't comfortable with. When I left uni, I was like, okay, I'm going to move to London, I'm going to work in the media. Ooh, like, just didn't know what I wanted to do, but I was still singing at that time. So I ended up working for Blast from the Past, Jane Norman, as a fitting model, very random. But I then quickly got bored of that, as you can imagine. And then that's where we met, Evolutions. And I was, a PA. And for years, I kind of just got stuck in that role, because I wasn't really... I mean, I loved music and I kept doing music in my spare time. I was in the gospel choir for a long time. But the business side just always intrigued me. So for a very long time, I was living a double life. So I would be singing as a semi-professional, doing lots of session work, doing backing vocals for people on TV. But never, I decided quite early that I didn't want to actually be a solo artist. So then when I was working at Evolutions, a job came up at a management company. And looking back at that now, like, it broke me, but it like completely broke me, but it made me like who I am today. So I am grateful for that time, but at that moment it wasn't pleasant at all. I think it started off on a really bad foot because when I got asked to join and accept the job, they asked me to change my name. So any sense of identity that I was trying to form within an industry that is all about that, I was just so, like, and the word is desperate. I was so desperate to work in music at that point that I was like, oh yeah, I'll do anything. And it's looking back now, you know, if I was to chat to my younger self, I'd be like, what? Because there was another Laura at the company, so they were, I was going to get too confused. All the artists are going to, you know, just get way too confused. So I just went with it. But it's because I didn't know my voice. I wasn't in a place where I am now, where I would have stood up for myself and said, this is not right.
The name thing is the name. So yeah. Bonkers. That, I remember I was working for Handle Recruitment at the time, and I think I answered the phone, and you were like, it's L. Edwards calling, and I don't know whether you recognized my voice or but somehow we realized it was each other. You were like, Sylve, it's Laura. And I was like, what? And I just remember thinking, that's the maddest thing, that someone had asked you to change your name just because someone else had the same first name in the same office.
Like, I haven't really thought about that for a while, and I do try and like block it out because obviously it was the catalyst of me like losing the sense of myself. And unless like, it was an active decision where, yes, I wanted to go down the artist route and you know, have an alter ego and own it and embody that, but it wasn't. It was forced upon me, and I was like, okay, well, I really want this job, so yeah, I'm going to change my name. Like, yeah, very strange.
Does it give you the ick factor now when you think about it?
Yeah, totally. Because like, if I was mentoring someone now, giving them advice, that would be an absolute no. Thing is, if I said no to them, I'm sure we could have found a different solution. But I just think with that company in particular, it was a bit of a cycle of they would employ the PA to the managing director, and then they would excel in that role, and then they would get dropped into the ocean of, okay, now you're managing these artists. And it's like, okay, you're gonna teach me, how am I learning on the job? Okay, so it's very much happened to my predecessor, who was called Laura. So it was literally like history repeating itself. So that time, really, it was like piece by piece I was taken apart. It was awful. I wanted to please people, I wanted to do an amazing job, and I knew that I could, but it was just, you know, it was like a Mexican standoff of like who was in the office the latest. Like, the time I lived just down the road, so I would just stay there till like 9-10 o'clock at night because I'm trying to do the best job. And with management as well, it's endless. It's never ending. Like, there's always something to do with management. So I was just in that awful cycle, and I wasn't taught a healthy way of working. And then if my boss is that way inclined, you know, they're just setting the example. So you just think that's the right way to do it. So then around that time, I got married, then became from Edwards to Leon. So I was like, okay, well, now it's best to like, fully own me, who I am. Even just the discussion around changing your surname when you get married, you have to almost say goodbye to who you were before, really. I know a lot of my friends now have either not changed their name from a work perspective, or they've got a double barrel surname. But I think, yeah, it's, for me, it's about my voice, owning it, which I've massively struggled with over the year. And the irony is that I'm a singer. So to get to a point where I am confident and comfortable with my opinion. And I think also impacting on that was the level of when you're someone's assistant, you don't really have a voice or opinion because you're just being told what to do. Like, it was never in my psyche to say no to anybody. I was just, yes, of course, yeah, I'll do that, yeah. Laura will do that, yeah, because she's great, Laura, yeah. I literally just like piling it up, and then it all just goes to shit. The shit hit the fan, and then I had to just set the reset button.
I think it's tough, isn't it? There's a couple of things I was going to say actually off the back of what you were talking about. Probably the smallest factor, but something that interests me is that whole changing your surname when you get married business. It just seems randomly old-fashioned anyway. Why should a woman have to take a man's name in a male-female marriage? Very odd. I've been married and divorced. And I went from this sort of Sylvia Gargiulo, which sort of goes and works really well, to Sylvia Martin, which sounds like a grandma's name. And I was like, I genuinely was like, who the fuck am I? Kind of, it was exciting at the time because I used to get really annoyed with thought. Whenever you called anyone, you'd have to go, hi, it's Sylvia Gargiulo. Yeah, that's S-I-L-V-I-A. G-A-R. Yeah, G-A-R. G-I-U. No, not R. I-U-L-O. Right. And then all of a sudden I could go, oh, it's Sylvia Martin. And everyone got it. And it was like, oh, well, that's really handy. And then you realise, like, piece by piece, your identity has slowly been sort of deconstructed. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And for you, you know, I think it sounds like that happened for a number of different reasons.
Mm.
I guess you were talking as well about staying late in the office and always saying yes to things and this idea that the later you stayed in the office, the better. Yeah. It is a bit bonkers, isn't it? Because when you are starting your music business career, you do want to be the person who appears to be capable and always on hand and
dedicated.
Goes the extra mile,
dedicated,
and all of these things, of course, we do want to be, but equally not at the expense of our own well-being.
Exactly. Yeah, so that time mixed in with working with an artist who had a really severe mental health issue that everyone sort of ignored, which again, even looking back, like it's awful. And I think that again is that narrative is built into my story that yes, it broke me at the time, but I'm grateful of that moment. Now my management company is, you know, a company where mental health is the forefront and purpose of trying to change the industry. I mean, there's definitely a lot more conversations happening around what we can do to protect our artists, but there's a long way to go. So although I was hugely burnt by it, I knew that management was for me, like just having that level of empathy of being a performer and a singer myself, I could get it from like the inside out. So I was determined to not just have that as a distant memory and, you know, awful thing that happened, but to, you know, make it into a positive. So I was like, right. Then the job came up at Universal Publishing, and that was a brilliant move. Obviously, I was day-to-day manager, so I was like, I'm going back a step. I don't want to do an executive role. But even just going from the title of PA to EA, for me, you know, I was probably in my own head, but I feel there's a lot of negative feelings around, oh, you're someone's PA that goes to get their shopping or their coffee or whatever. And that leader would not be able to operate without that support. So again, it's like trying to change my mindset around that.
Can we talk about being a PA as well? Because I think
just
from a recruitment and from an HR perspective and from a number of different perspectives, I think PAs are the unsung heroes. And I can remember, I think you're right. There's a sort of, some people have this sort of looking down their nose, oh, you're someone's PA. Mm. Oh, God, you're just their PA.
Yeah.
No, it's not. You're just their PA. You are the person that
that's the thing,
ensures.
Just, you're using the word just in front of that. It just demoralises. Oh, you're just this. Sorry, just to interject, there's a lady a while ago who I worked with was helping this artist I was working with, and she was a psychologist, and she was like, even in your emails, how many times you go, hey, it's just me, or in the just me. It's like, even that in itself, like the language is just so, like you're belittling yourself by saying, oh, it's just me, or something like this. You know what I mean? It's all these tiny little words that make such a difference.
They have an impact, don't they? And I think with that, I remember when I was, I think I was 20 at the time, I was PA to the MD of this sort of small content creation business. So in 2000, ahead of our time. I was a pretty shit PA, I will admit that. It was just an admin job for me as far as I was concerned. Until the day that my boss said to me, Sylve, I need you to be across this stuff, because if I got hit by a bus tomorrow, you'd be the one running the company. And I was kind of, all of a sudden, it was like, there it is. That's what you are when you are someone's assistant. When you are an exec's assistant, you are not only the person that makes their sort of day-to-day operations run smoothly, but you are the person with all that knowledge.
Mm.
So
also confidant as well.
Yeah. I think that, you know, sometimes we'll be briefing candidates. Sometimes I'm like, would you look at a PA role? And some people would sort of dismiss it out of hand. And look, different PAs do different jobs.
Yeah.
For different people, and what you know, some people will have a personal PA, or some people will have a more old school secretarial PA, but 9 times out of 10 it is a much bigger job, I think. And I would encourage people to look at those opportunities as well, because you
100%.
Can learn
well. That's how I learned about the industry. Exactly. And I mean, I like to be a bit nosy but also having the power to like be the gatekeeper, and you know, that level of confidentiality that's needed in that role, where, you know, I think a lot of the time I would have fun at work, but I'd never be like getting drunk at a party, maybe mainly because I was organizing them, but I would always have that level of professionalism where, because I know that people would go out of their way to say, oh, what's happening with this? And I'd be like, you know, you're not going to trick me to tell you things. So there's so many qualities that a PA, EA, whatever, I think we should call them gatekeepers from now on.
I like that. We're rebranding it, gatekeepers.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many transferable skills. That's neat. You know, you can go from a PA in any kind of industry, if you wanted to change your industry, it's very fluid, isn't it? Because once you have those skills, a lot of them are life skills. A lot of them are skills that you need to run a business. You know, like the amount of times where I would just get screwed up receipts, like literally shoved on my desk and be like, oh, I'll do my expenses. Like, I haven't even got a clue like what these are for. The level of disrespect there is just like, I'm a human being. Let's have a conversation. You know, I'm not your dog's body. But now, you know, doing my expenses and tax return, actually, I'm looking back and like, oh, that was really good training for this moment because I'm very organized with that. So there are skills within those roles that are so transferable. And I think my issue is because the majority of them generally are female in those roles. And then adding that into the mix of, you know, the conversation around why there are not many female executives at top levels, is that because they naturally, you know, not everybody, but there are people that would want to go and have a baby. So then you have to have a break in your career. So is that a reason why there are more men at those levels, but they're always supported by women? What's the famous phrase? Behind every great man is a woman.
Yep, that's right.
There you go. Yeah, it's definitely a bigger conversation, but it really, yeah, being a newish mum myself, it's definitely an area of industry that isn't talked about, motherhood. And I essentially don't have colleagues because I work on my own, but you know, that fear around actually announcing that I was pregnant, I don't know, maybe it was more in my own head, but I think there is a bit of a stigma attached to, oh, she's done with now. Yeah, but actually the skills you acquire by being a mum are like invaluable. So, you know, being able to run a business, be a great mum, still do all these things at the same time, you're adding another job on top of your job. So that should be celebrated. And for me, it was actually, we met at Second to Last Women in Music Awards. And I was so inspired by that event. I was like, wow, I'm definitely going to come back to this. I felt really grateful that I'd been invited. But I came away like with a little bit disheartened because like everyone's thanking their mum when they're accepting their awards, which is brilliant, incredible. But no one's actually talking about what it means to be a mother within the music industry. Not one. There was one lady, the one sort of like the lifetime or like an honorary or award. And she said just under her breath, oh, I had twins and got out of the way, moved on. Like, why isn't we talking about this? And like, there's so many webinars and panels that I've joined, especially over lockdown, female related in the industry. And it's like the big elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about it.
It's a weird dynamic, isn't it? And I think to really unpack it, you have to look, well, not to unpack that particular subject, but when you broaden that subject out, you know, I don't have children. I have no interest in having children. I love children, but I don't want my own. And, you know, people might refer to me as childless. Am I childless or am I child free? What way are we looking at that? And also the fact
none of their business.
Yeah, no, exactly.
None of their business to give you their title.
Yeah. And also then the role of fathers, you know, the expectation shouldn't always be that mothers are the primary caregiver. Mm. And I wonder as well, I think you're absolutely right and absolutely valid. People don't talk about being a mum in the music industry or focus on that conversation a lot of the time. But also, I guess I wonder whether lockdown and the way we've been living our lives for the last X amount of time, where maybe fathers who didn't spend so much time with their children at home, maybe they didn't have so much of a responsibility for childcare provision.
Yeah.
Has that dynamic changed as well? And I've spoken to lots of dads who are like, you know what, I've really loved spending more time with my kids and it has been stressful, but it's made me sort of prioritise
exactly.
And I think prioritising is a sort of underlying topic that we've spoken about through our conversation so far, whether it's like, you know, being able to prioritise, which makes you good at your job, because I think it's an absolutely key skill, or whether it's prioritising in terms of your life and what we're talking about now, which is the balance between how much work can take from you, because it does take from you, particularly in certain industries. And I think music industry is one where it does take from us. But yeah, it's about prioritising yourself and your boundaries and your well-being. So we know how you got in. We've heard a bit about your career path. I suppose, where are we now? Are we at BMG career-wise?
Oh, yeah. From your local, I went to BMG for a year. Yeah. So when I was at the management company, I'd worked with Alistair Norbury. He was a manager to Brian Ferry. And then he moved to BMG. He was looking for an assistant. So I went to work with him for a year. I knew I had to get out of Universal because my boss at the time, the president, who I had such a great relationship with, he left. So I was like, okay. Now's my time to move on. and move on to BMG, but I just always saw that as a stepping stone. And around this time, the House Gospel Choir was getting more and more active and busy, and there was a lot of interest. It wasn't just this community choir that was like uplifting everyone on a weekly basis. It became something else, and ambition, yeah, it just grew and grew. And there was the intention to start releasing music. So it was a conversation almost like over the water cooler at BMG with one of the A&Rs. I think we were talking about Glastonbury, and he asked me, he's like, oh, are you going to Glastonbury? I was like, yeah, I'm actually performing. I was like, really? I honestly like lived a double life. I didn't really tell anyone at work what I did outside of work. I think in my head, for some reason, I always thought that people would think I had a hidden agenda. Oh, she's only working here because she wants to get signed. No, I have another life out of this work environment. I love singing. Like, it's soul fulfilling. This job wasn't that, but it was part of my journey to get to where I am now. And with the choir, yeah, he was just like, oh, so you're performing? And I explained. I was like, yeah, we're opening West Holt stage. He was like, what? Like, and then I started showing videos. He's like, have you ever thought about making a record? I was like, yeah, definitely something we talk about, but actually making that a reality. You know, I'd never done that before. So, you know, I had all these contacts over the years. I thought if I draw them all together and start having conversations, then yeah, potentially that could be it. And it was almost like that moment where my two worlds came together. And I thought, oh, but I don't have to actually hide anymore. I can manage this music project that I'm also in. Huh? Wow. Okay. Never really thought of that before. But it works. I mean, again, like probably in my own head, I always used to think, well, because it is quite a unique scenario. You don't really, I mean, you get people that self-manage, but I think the beauty of it is because there's a collective of people. I'm one part of that and it's not all on me. So there's space for me to go and do what I need to do from a management perspective. And just from there, it's just grown from strength to strength. I know when I was at BMG for the year, I worked with an amazing woman called Selena Barker, who's a career coach. And she helped me literally just 3-4 months worth of working together, held my hand to say, right, Laura, you're doing this, that you have to. And I'd actually threatened to email her a year before when I was at Universal to do that. But I just chickened out. I kept thinking, well, if I worked for a publisher, I worked for a management company, I worked for a record label, I was trying to do what I could to really, you know, gather as much information as possible to get to a point where I was confident enough to go out on my own and just fly. But my wings were most definitely like clipped for various many reasons. So yeah, she helped me just really take that leap of faith. So I left at the Christmas of 2017. And then 2018 was just mad. We signed Island Records in the April. We had low gigs, summer gigs all over Europe, just performing in so many places. I was acting tour manager at the time, so I was wearing a lot of hats. And then we went to Singapore in the September. We played the Formula One Grand Prix. It was literally like, it was just an amazing year. But in amongst that, I had the worst level of imposter syndrome. Gets into my husband like, I can't do this. He's like, you're fucking doing it. I don't understand. Like, you're actually doing it, but I can't do it. Maybe you're doing it. So I had to really work on myself to get to a point where I just believed in myself, because I really didn't. Loads of people telling me that they did around me, but I think, yeah, at my very core, there was some disconnect that I just couldn't do it. So I worked, going back to Dr. Talene, we worked together for 6 months, and she really just helped me so much. It was life-changing. And also knowing that in the not-too-distant future, I would have a baby, I just thought, do you know what? I need to hold myself accountable, have someone there that's holding me accountable, and just be like, enough's enough now. Like, there's no more excuses. You have to sort yourself out. Like, you're brilliant. Yeah, just be my own cheerleader, which has taken me all this time. I obviously still have my moments, but generally, actually just really believing in myself, I think, has been the biggest challenge. So in amongst that, there's a whole like conversation about valuing my worth and attached to my work. And once you go and go on your own, it's like, okay, so now I've got to earn a living. It's not just a hobby anymore. It's not a passion project. You know, I've been getting a regular salary for how many years and doing this on the side. Again, like, time to get serious, get an accountant, do all this. Yeah, make mistakes along the way, but that's the only way you learn. And ask for advice. Don't be afraid of that, because it's just imperative, because these people have been through what you've been through. And at some point, I'm going to be helping other people go through similar things on the first part of their journey. So it's just that life cycle. Again, going back to the people out of the peas, like, it's that collective power is just so important. So that takes us up to date. So I've been, yeah, managing House Gospel Choir. My whole kind of focus has been on that project, because I just love everything about it, from the people that are involved in it to the music that we're making to like who we're celebrating in terms of the originators. Like, I love house music, always have done. I love going to Ibiza, but I also love R&B, soul, gospel music. So to combine those two genres together, I remember even when I first joined the choir, I was like, they love raving and they sing gospel music from the soul, like deep from the soul. I was like, wow, this is literally me, like everything. So that relationship grew over time, where I would just, you know, from a management perspective, just say, oh, I know this person, you know, and I built the trust up with Natalie, who's the founder, and we've got a brilliant working relationship now. It's trust. You know, that's the thing with an artist and the manager. For me, the number one thing is trust, because it almost goes back to the transferable skills of being someone's assistant, not their assistant, but it's just that, you know, you're their confidant, you know, you're the sounding board for them. You're their cheerleader, you know, you're the gatekeeper, you're all these things. But like I said earlier, it's not about rescuing or helping. It's about empowering them to be the best version of themselves. I've been on a mission for a while now, and thought that my purpose is to do whatever I can, keep learning, keep growing, just to become the best version of myself. And that has a ripple effect. So I can see with amongst friends and family and people in the choir, like if you're doing great things for yourself, not in a selfish way, but, you know, for the greater good. And this movement of house gospel choir is all about that. It's all about upliftment. And it's about, you know, the mantra is we are one. And I think even more so in the last year or so, like that statement is so important. Like, we're all in the same situation. Yes, we're on our different ships in the ocean that, you know, people are obviously, unfortunately, you know, suffering and struggling more than others. But it's a global situation where, like, one of my core values is empathy and just standing in that other person's shoes and really understanding how they're feeling. It's not even anything else. What are they feeling in that moment, and how can I help empower them around mental health and finding the tools? Again, it's giving them the tool kit. It's not like, oh, I'll do this for you, I'll come and help you. For me, where I'm at now, I'm so happy to be able to speak about it openly and learn from my mistakes and like share my journey, because I just feel like I can help one other person that's feeling some of those insecurities and lack of self-belief and lack of confidence, that, you know, with various parts of the toolkit, you can definitely be on a path to becoming the best version of yourself. That's what life's about, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you've certainly empowered me this morning. I'm going to be on my LinkedIn shortly changing the word help to empower. Yeah. And I think I agree, like, with everything you said. I totally agree. The empathy thing is so important. And I think, you know, one of the things that I talk about a lot is I think people are so overwhelmed. And I guess the world that we live in the last year has physically, or quite literally, just become a lot smaller. Like, for, you know, lots of people, they are confined to their homes specifically. Some people, like myself, might live on their own, or, you know, even if you're indoors with your family, everyone's world has become smaller. And I think that means that everyone's feelings, thoughts, fears, concerns have become amplified as well, and has basically left everyone. Not only is there the actual threat of COVID, there is the feelings of just being overwhelmed and isolated that play out into real behaviours. So, Laura, tell me what you would like to change about the music business.
What I would love to change is the conversation around mental health. But not only that, it's emotional health, physical health. I think mental health is definitely something I'm very passionate about, and down to experience of being burnt myself and having to rebuild myself back up step by step, finding the tools to really help myself get to a space where I could then operate confidently and then grow from that point. But it's taken me a long time to get to that point. So from a change perspective, I think from a management perspective, to have that as like an integral part of the working practice. And I truly believe that when you sign a record deal, if someone was to sign a record deal, whether it's a major independent, for like any contract that's a partnership, there needs to be a duty of care within that, where there needs to be a level of support. You know, you're about to enter into a world that's going to throw you upside down and turn you inside out, especially, you know, with social media. I feel like now it's more about the SOS moment of that it's gone too far, so they need to grind to a halt. Yes, it's a business at the end of the day. So what do you need to do to protect your business? Self-care, And I, even over the last year, I've done a lot of research into the term self-care. I think it's just become this thing where people think it is just very surface level, but it's much deeper than that. And I think even just creating boundaries, I know that creating boundaries is a really impactful way of giving yourself care, because it's protection, it's armoring up, it's protecting your time. Personally, like, having a baby has taught me that, because my time is precious, and being present in those moments where I can't be all to everybody, but I can have it all. Like, I know that I can have it all if I put my mind to it, but I just need to set the boundaries where I protect those elements of my life. And from an industry perspective, yeah, for them to be written into a contract, or at least have a conversation going into an agreement. I think that partnership, especially this conversation around the economics of streaming, like, at the moment, it doesn't feel like a partnership. You're going into very one-sided relationship, and then you're asked to do all this work. Yes, you get an advance, but see, it's not free money, you've got to pay it back. But then the level of being able to pay that back, you're already on the back foot because of the, you haven't got a great rate of return. So I think that's a key moment, and for it to be normalized in conversations, like, oh yeah, like, it's part of a deal term, you know, rather than it just being an afterthought or not being added in whatsoever.
I think it's really interesting you're talking about that sort of duty of care element, essentially, playing a bigger part. Sometimes I just sort of want to smack my head against the desk, because I don't understand why it isn't already. You know, regardless of whether it's between a record label and an artist, or an employer and an employee, or, whatever form that takes, ultimately, it is about treating others as human beings. And I think sometimes that, you know, maybe the more power you have, maybe the more money you have, maybe the more pressure there is to make money, you know, in a business perspective, that sort of element of humanity gets sort of dissolved into nothing, and it becomes a product, you know, much in a business, even beyond the music industry or creative industries, the little people, in inverted commas, just sort of, they become a number rather than a person. And I don't know whether this is much easier for me to say, because I run my own business and it's a small organization and it is people focused. It just seems fucking insane to me. That is not front and center of every conversation anyway, but I do think it's a lot about another P, power, and if everyone sort of recognized their own power, and I don't mean that in a kind of weird aggressive way, or you know, not trying to incite any situations here, but if everyone recognised their own power that they have to create their own boundaries and to say no and appreciate, you know, I think, notwithstanding, that sounds like a privileged thing to say anyway, I'm going to recognise my power, you know, and sometimes I feel powerless when I'm trying to run a business and keep people in jobs as well as pay my bills, you know, and answer emails that are coming in from clients at 10:45 at night. And you're like, fuck this. I work in recruitment and HR.
Yeah.
There's nothing I'm doing that's that important that means that you, the client, need to email me at 10:45 at night. But then
do you think do you think that's down to the fact that you're looking at your device at that
100%.
Time? 100%. Yeah, 100%. So I think it's like they do their thing, you do your thing. Like, you never know, they might have kids where they have to find that window in the evening when they've gone to bed to do their work. So then if you then block that out, and there's no way of, and I think this is about use of the phone and devices, that's a huge thing. And we're so far down that road of like no return, where it's an addiction, like, to actually get off of the device. And I've got a second phone that I keep thinking about. I'm going to use that as like my private bat phone, basically. So when I go out, you know, if an emergency happens, I can use that, but at least I'm physically away from my phone, so I don't look at it. But yeah, if you were to then look in the morning, it wouldn't bother you that they emailed it quarter to them. It's just that you're looking at it when you're looking at it.
This is exactly the point, I suppose, that I'm trying to get to, and the conversation around boundaries is ultimately, it sort of doesn't matter what anyone else does, because what matters is the structures and the armor you referred to it as earlier. Yeah. You'll put your own boundaries in place. I've started doing the sleep mode on my phone. So messages, yeah. emails, alerts are blocked from yeah. a certain time of night. Yeah. And, you know, essentially it becomes my own fault if I go, oh, do you know what? Let's just cap a quick yeah. email. Because, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise,
and then your brain starts spiraling. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. I do, obviously this situation that we're in for many people has been tragic and awful, but it will pass as everything does. And I feel like this is an opportunity for people to design their life, how they really feel they can thrive and they're not just surviving. I think even more so now, because there doesn't seem to be any, to me anyway, it feels like one continuous day. So even last weekend, I was like, right, I've got to do something that actually makes the weekend feel like the weekend by doing something and defining that. And again, it's boundaries, right? This is my weekend that I protect and it's my time. If I need to do something for myself, with my family or friends, like, you know, there's ways to do it even now, whether it's even just, you know, over FaceTime, whatever. But I think, yeah, boundaries are just so important to like internal peace.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think boundaries are often wrapped up in some weird feeling of guilt as well. Like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. sometimes I guess when we work in an industry that we love and is quite a demanding mm. one, you're kind of like, oh, well, I'm really lucky to do what I do. So let me just yeah. do that extra email, answer that extra email. But eventually you no. become burnt out, exhausted, resentful. Exactly. And I think that's why we all mm. have to sort of take control as much as humanly possible of our own boundaries mm. and what we accept, I suppose, to some degree.
There's so much at the moment in life is out of our control, that if you can try and create some kind of level of like peaceful control in your life with boundaries, then at least you then feel empowered that, okay, yeah, well, I'm in charge of my life rather than it just being dictated by someone else.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a certain self-reflection element that's important, because I'm really aware that I, you know, I've just massively, gone on a rant yeah. about clients emailing me at 10:45 at night, knowing full well that often I don't start answering emails until 7 p.m. because my day is back-to-back yeah. Zoom calls. And it's like, okay, well, let me just look at myself and my own behaviours yeah. and build in those boundaries for me, because actually I can't really criticise with any weight or authority anyone else if I'm basically falling into the same trap. So it's almost like that thing of, okay, let me just check myself and move forward in the yeah. best way that I can. Two quick questions.
I agree, but I think when you're running your own business, though, it's different.
Yeah, I mean, the pressure's sort of doubled mm. and then mm. add on top of that, the isolation of the current year and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it is a, yeah. it's a tricky one. Yeah.
Be kind to ourselves.
Oh my God, being kinder to ourselves is just such a, yeah. I mean, I say it a lot and then I don't do it to myself.
Yeah.
So yes, being kinder to myself is something I talk about a lot, but I'm really rubbish at taking my own advice, which I will, I'm gonna learn to do. That is one of my learning points for this next coming year. So two Good. Final quick questions from me until we hand over yeah. to Kiani for Kiani's Question Corner. Two questions focused towards anyone starting their career journey now. So what do you wish you'd known when you started out? And then what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
I wish I'd known at the time to just fully own my voice and know that everything's a process and it's a learning journey, and like you're not going to know everything and be okay with that. And I think about this best piece of advice. One of my old bosses, and it's not his quote, but he said a lot, was the only constant in life is change. And I think that's just so important, because again, it's just how you learn, how you grow, and how you become the best version of yourself is just by accepting change and just rolling with it.
There you go. Agreed on all of the above. Now it's time for my favorite bit of the show. So each episode we ask our amazing producer Kiani if there's anything he'd like to ask our guests, as he is in the early stages of his career. And obviously I love to encourage people to ask questions, so I'm all about creating those opportunities. This is the bit we call Kiani's Question Corner.
Thanks for that, Silv. So my first question is, Laura, as an artist manager, what is your management style? Is there anything like you tell yourself or what you implement for your work?
I suppose the main thing is like lead by example, because especially from a mental health perspective, if I'm really trying to champion being an advocate for positive mental health and I'm not doing that, then how can I inspire and uplift my clients and artists to live their life in that way? So I'm always sharing nuggets of what worked for me, but then, you know, they don't necessarily work for the next person. But I think it's just having that like open forum of, oh, have you tried this? Or yeah, I think it's about being open and transparent. Transparency is really key because that builds a really great level of trust.
That's really good. It goes into my second question, actually, and I know you can almost like answer it the same, but I really want to know, because I know Silver said earlier that you support creatives to get to like the next level without compromising their mental health and well-being. How do you specifically go about doing that? Is there a way that you go about doing that? Like, is it their schedules you do? Is it like, or do you like motivate your artists, or how is it that you go about that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of things. I think it's that it comes down to trust again, because your trust, you know, like the fact that they're entrusting their vision with you is a gift in itself. So to find that connection with someone where you can really trust them to just to be their biggest cheerleader and confidant and supporter. So whether that's like I was saying, there's a meeting that we've retitled Pushes, where actually a lot of self-care and understanding is factored into that, because it is all about, okay, how can we get you to your next level and support you the best way possible? And then, yeah, scheduling. I've worked with artists before where you just see that's where burnout comes, because it's not humanly possible to keep on that treadmill. So just really mindful. And I've just learned like how not to do it from previous examples. And I think like regular chats on the phone, like that really helps, because, you know, sometimes we just hide behind our fingers all the time, don't we? So I think just regular conversations, and even like from a creative perspective, like with the choir, like we always say every song is a conversation. So conversation is so important, because whether that's to help with an issue, challenge, to talk about it, to like unpack it and unfold it, and then I'm not there to solve the problem, but, you know, just to be that sounding board is super helpful and inspiring. And then, yeah, just moving in a way that it's like all cards on the table, essentially.
No, that's really good. I always say to myself as well, like, what's the point of working hard if you're not really enjoying the process, if that makes sense? So I think that's a really important way to go about that as well. That's really good, Laura. I reckon, no, keep that
thank
up.
You.
That's really good. Back
Thanks
to you,
so. Nice one. Thank you, Keone. Fabulous questions as always. So we've really, I mean, trust and transparency have been themes, and I feel like there's a whole nother podcast in this, Laura. So at some point, I'm sure I'll be, maybe in the not too distant future, be saying, can we have another chat? Each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. So tell us a bit about who you've picked and why.
Okay, so the charity I've picked, it's called The Avenues. It's a youth project in West London. And my husband actually is one of the senior youth workers there. And it's an amazing organisation that's been running for over 40 years. And for me to be able to give something back to them that's going to help the next generation, I think, is personally, I feel like why I'm here. Like, we have to make change and make the world a better place for the next generation. And as part of that, myself and my husband have actually, we're running a music course as part of that. We started in September, and it has been quite challenging, obviously, with the current climate. But just to see like that spark of raw talent, and then be able to nurture these young people to, again, like be the best versions of themselves, and like realize their purpose and what their legacy potentially could be. It may not even be music, like just to open up and have that safe space where they can go off school. I mean, at the moment, yeah, again, it's challenging because they've had to close their doors. But like to see what they've done over the last year within lockdown is awe-inspiring, because they've been in the first part, like my husband was delivering food to local families. There were loads of donations that came in. But my main point is the fact it's no longer government funded. And it's completely and utterly ridiculous that they don't recognise the power of this. It's a movement. Like, it's such an important part of the community and to life, and the fact that everything now is self-funded is just incredible, that they've got that, you know, the daily motivation, like they have to get up in the morning to do what they need to do in order to make the lives of these young people just that fraction better from what, you know, from they're experiencing at that time.
That's an incredible charity, an incredible cause. And I mean, we've talked before about Marcus's involvement, your husband's involvement in that. And it's, I think, again, just incredible and amazing. And I suppose the other side of that is exceptionally frustrating that we have a government in place who don't seem to give a shit. Yeah, I mean, a government who are so almost willfully ignorant to the fact that this has to be done on a charitable level because they are failing the people of this country so massively. There you go. There's my soapbox for the episode. Amazing. Laura Leon, just want to say a massive thank you, Laura. I've so enjoyed our chat, and I feel like there's so much more there for us to talk about. So I'm anticipating another episode even before we finish this one.
Amazing. I'd love that. Thank you.
So that's it for another episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow the BIY pod. And you can follow us on our socials as well. We're at biy.people.and.talent on Instagram. And if you're just starting out in the music business, check out our Future Talent Facebook page, which is BIY Future Talent. And for anyone who's already on their music business career path, it's BIY Peoples. And a big thank you to Keanu Kerr and Danny Roberts, our production team on the BIY pod. And we will see you all again soon. Thanks, guys.
This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.